The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Already on the North and South Keys, there have been significant restrictions placed on the use of private cars, and two more pretty major roads on the south side of the city are going to be included in the next phase. With me to discuss, James May, the former Top Gear and Grand Tour presenter. James, it is a real, real pleasure to talk to you. I don't expect you to know in great detail what is included in phase two of the Dublin City Council transport plan, but in a general sense, how much should cities be prioritising good public transport and bicycle and pedestrian access over the concerns of private car drivers?
Well, you're dead right. I don't know that much about phase two of Dublin's transport plan.
Well, for shame.
I'm sorry. I apologise to your listeners. I use public transport a bit. I'm a big fan of cycling in cities. I think it's very efficient, very quick. There is a case, for making bicycle lanes and cycle infrastructure. We've got tons of it in London. But some of it can become a bit overdone, in my view, and a bit almost pedantic. I think what's happening here is people are trying to control bicycles the same way that they do motor traffic, you know, with endless lights. So we've got junctions with lights for cars, filters for cars, lights for pedestrians, and then another set of lights for bicycles. And it's very expensive, I suspect, and I think it's too much. I think you can leave a lot of this stuff, certainly where pedestrians and casual cyclists are concerned, to the wit of humanity.
Oh, but that is a big risk, isn't it? I mean, from a policymaker's point of view, they don't have an awful lot of trust in humanity.
No, they don't, but I think that's a failing, and I suspect there will be lawyers involved. I can see at some of the junctions near my house, there's a very big double cycle lane going past the end of my road. I can almost smell the meetings they had where they said, well, we don't want to be liable for this, so we've got to put a stop sign here and we've got to put a giveaway here, so we better put some traffic lights, because otherwise it isn't absolutely dead clear what's supposed to happen. We've become slightly enslaved by the idea of rules, and they are to a certain extent necessary for cars and vans and trucks because they're big and heavy and not that wieldy. But I'm not sure it's really necessary for people and bicycles and joggers and scooters and so on. And I've been to plenty of countries where there are virtually no markings for these things on the road, namely, well, Amsterdam, Holland, I should say. Amsterdam isn't a country, and India, for example. And if you leave people to it, they work it out pretty well. The human computer is a remarkable device, better than an algorithm.
It is, but it's you say kind of enslavement to rules. It's enslavement to litigation as well, isn't it? That's what it is. It's a terror of litigation.
Yeah, I suspect if you follow the trail of these things, you will arrive at a lawyer who says no, because that's generally their job, because it's the only safe option, saying no to everything. But I don't know, maybe occasionally we should have the courage to ignore them and say, no, we will just let it roll.
Do you think it puts some people off cycling, getting treated no different from a car?
Well, I suspect, I mean, that's a balancing act. Supposedly, according to our mayor here, a lot of people are now encouraged to cycle because there is a cycle infrastructure and it's safer than being on the road, mixing it with cars and vans and so on. I don't think it so much puts people off, but I think people are disinclined to observe all the rules if they think there are too many of them.
The other feature of this debate around, you know, cycling or public transport versus the private car that always strikes me as odd is how ideological some people's positions are. You can have a practical complaint about, you know, not being able to rely on public transport because there's not a bus stop or a tram stop or whatever it happens to be near you, or because of the stuff you're bringing in and out of a city. But there's also this view that is remarkably pervasive, and it's something like, I own a car, I pay car tax, and I pay other tax on top of that. This is a free country. I should be able to drive wherever I bloody well like.
Yes, that view is quite prevalent, and I have some sympathy with it. But I mean, the honest truth is I use my bicycle in London, which is a busy place. I know Dublin is a busy place as well. Because it's actually quicker and more convenient. And I think ultimately, I mean, I've got numerous cars. I pay a lot of various taxes that pay for the roads as well, but I'm choosing not to use my car. I'm going to occasionally walk or use my bike. And that's quite liberating. I don't think, I mean, people talk about road tax. It isn't really road tax. It's a vehicle excise duty. It is just a random tax, really, and it doesn't go to the roads. But
yeah, it goes into that big black hole.
It goes into a very big black hole. But it doesn't give you any extra right to the road, and it doesn't mean you're obliged to get value for money by using your car every waking minute.
But you know, when you say you use the bike then because it's convenient to do so. I mean, that's the point you have to get to in terms of it tipping the balance, isn't it? It's one of convenience. Because the other argument made is that, you know, we shouldn't use our cars. We should feel bad about using our cars because we'll make the city a cleaner, greener place if we don't use it, and it's better for the environment and all that. And all of those things are true, I'm sure. But, I mean, I'm not sure how effective they are as arguments. It ultimately comes out, most human decisions ultimately come down to convenience, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. They come down to convenience and cost. Virtually everything we do, I'm absolutely with you on that. I mean, it is. I think we have to use cars with discretion. And I say this as someone who loves cars, and I don't want them to be, you know, vilified or taken away from us. There are, where I live anyway, a lot of people who will drive less than a mile to go to the shops or the hairdresser or whatever it is people do. And that strikes me as ridiculous and actually spoils the pleasure of you know, the car, motoring, driving and all the rest of it. So I wouldn't do that. I think if you, the trouble is it's politically weighted. It's about aspiration. It's about status, people's desire to be rebellious or not to feel that they're being controlled by the man, you know. And a lot of this comes out in car use, because as you were just explaining, people say, I should be bloody well able to drive my car wherever I want because I've paid for it. Yes, you technically are, but that doesn't mean you have to. you can think about it a bit. I enjoy my cars more because I almost tried to treat it like a hobby, but I find that cars are not enjoyable and not particularly useful around a city or a busy town, and they're actually excellent for going between places. And that's in some ways the opposite of what a lot of people see the car as. They see, you know, that we should use trains to go from one city to another and then small runabout-style cars to go around the city itself because they're convenient and you leave when you want to leave and they're short journeys and so on. But I don't really feel that because I find driving in cities very boring, really.
Yeah.
And I don't enjoy it.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that one. I have a long commute every day. And the best part of it is the bit in between the two cities where the road is open. The worst part of it is the 16 traffic lights I have to negotiate from the Red Cow roundabout to get to this radio station. But I think that the statistics actually you cite there are true here as well. I think the overwhelming majority of car journeys in cities are 2 kilometres or less, according to the surveys done here. But you use the word as well there. You said you don't want to see people vilified for using their car. That's another aspect of this debate that always strikes me as odd. And maybe it's a feature of just the nature of all debate in the internet age or the social media age, is that everybody gets driven out to kind of one position that's exclusive, and it's a zero-sum game. But it's once you criticise car use in the city, suddenly you're coming for everybody's cars. I don't believe there should be any car, or that's how you're portrayed. And vice versa, you're some kind of climate denier if you advocate for any use of private cars.
That's exactly right. These things do tend to become polarised, and I've, you know, come in for a lot of stick from people because I've presented car shows and so on, and I've occasionally said, oh, I don't think cars really work in the city, and I try not to use mine. And they say, you know, you're a traitor. How can you say that? I say that because I actually still love cars, and I want the pleasure of using them to remain. I don't want it to be sullied. So you know, a little bit of thought about, I mean, enjoy your car. Don't see it as a right that you have to pursue because you're making a point. You will just make yourself unhappy. Keep it as something to cherish and enjoy when it's the best solution, which it often is. I mean, it is in town if you have to collect heavy things. I can't go on my bicycle up to town and pick up a large vase, for example. I've never been to town and picked up a large vase, but, you know, that's an example.
Yes.
Or in B, I would have to either have it delivered or use the car. Of course, it's not, you don't have to, it's not like a religion. You don't have to choose one for life. You can try several.
Have you a lot of flowers in the house that a vase is the first thing that springs to mind as something you might collect in town?
I was trying to think of something that would be difficult and dangerous to carry on a bicycle, and vase, for some reason, the first thing that came to mind. But let's say microwave oven. Or dining chair. dining chair. I don't know.
Given, as I said right at the outset, that you're probably not entirely au fait with phase two of Dublin City Council's transport plan, you're very good for chatting about it. Let me ask you about Explorers, the show that's on tour. What can people expect?
It will be on tour from August. It actually starts in very explorer-y fashion on the opposite side of the world, because I'm taking it to Australia and New Zealand and then Singapore on the way home. And then in the autumn, by which I mean October, it will start as a sort of British Isles tour, but we haven't exactly worked out the venues yet. But it's in essence, it's a theatre stage show, not a lecture as such. It's, it's got special effects and graphics and sounds and probably some smoke and dry ice and things. And it's about the nature of exploration. It's a massive subject. We're not going to be able to do the whole thing. But we will talk about why people explore, the problems of exploration, of navigation, of understanding the size of the world, and how, you know, starting with human migration, going all the way up to the possibilities of intergalactic travel, how exploration has been fundamental to the way we are as humans and the way and where we live.
I assume you're going to touch on some of the romantic characters from the past. I mean, is that era of exploration gone from a human point of view? I mean, is there still a place, would you imagine, in the future for kind of Scots and Hillarys and Cousteaus or whoever it happens to be?
Well, I think the difference between now and, say, the late 15th century, when Columbus and so on were mucking about, is that we sort of know where everything is. I don't think anybody's going to discover a new landmass in the Southern Hemisphere or anything like that. But there are places that are relatively unexplored. One of them is the bottom of the ocean. We know surprisingly little about that. We know what's out in space. You know, it's been mapped extensively, but actually going there is something entirely different. And there are people who are very serious about it, about colonizing Mars, living on the moon. I mean, we were originally told when the Apollo program was underway that there would be tourist trips to the moon by the mid-80s. And of course, it didn't happen. It's one of those great disappointments of science, a bit like your robot butler that you're supposed to have by now. And I think one of the, I can't remember which American president it was it Jimmy Carter, I think, signed up. Pan Am actually had a system for signing on for the trips to the moon when they became available. And I think it was either Ronald Reagan or Jimmy Carter signed up for it. And apparently his wife said to him, "You'll be president before you go to the moon." And actually it turned out he was.
Listen, when you mentioned people who are serious about occupying Mars, I mean, I wish that's all he'd concentrate on for a while at least. Anyway, James, it's been a real pleasure.
It's not just him. There are other people.
There are absolutely other serious people as well. James, listen, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks a million for chatting to us.
No, any time at all.
James May, former Top Gear and Grand Tour presenter, and that show Explorers. Keep an eye out as the details get released, but it is heading to the Antipodes later in the year, towards the end of the summer, our summer, and then into spring and autumn. It'll be swinging back towards the UK and Ireland. So keep an eye out for details on that. James May, thank you very, very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.